Welcome everybody to episode 6 of Kev's Perspective. I'm your host, Kev Lowe, and today I have a very special guest. His name is Cato. Cato is a man of many talents. He is the founder and owner of the company I work for, CLM Presents, and Schaefer Management. He is a social media director for Riff Raff, head of marketing for Chris Webby, and is a legend from Minnesota that continues to make explosive moves in the music business industry. Without this man, I would not be where I am, being able to make this podcast and make these guests happen, okay? He is my mentor. He's a very important person to look at in the music industry. He grew so fast from an artist, from a promoter, and now he's doing big things with big artists, okay? Without further ado, enjoy the episode. Cheer. Cato, what's going on, my guy?
Hello. What's going on, my guy?
How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Just fantastic. I was just dealing with your audio issue bullshit.
Man, it's like every time I see you, it's like you're becoming more and more like Cato.
Oh, is that it?
Arm tattoos, podcasting, high smile, teeth whitening.
Bro, do you do high smile too?
You know that I do.
I didn't know you did high smile. There's like fucking 20 things like that you can whiten your teeth with. I just didn't know that you did high smile.
Yeah, I usually just pour straight peroxide on my teeth.
Shut the fuck.
Just gargle.
All right, so everybody who don't know, this is fucking my boss, Cato. Caitlin Schaefer, to be exact. He's a fuck. This podcast can be very chill, not as informative as normal. I think it's just going to be more a goofy-ass podcast.
It can be informative.
Where the fuck are you going? See, this is what I mean. Like, what am I dealing with right now?
I just wanted to close the door. Is that okay?
Nah, dude. I don't care.
No, ask me whatever. I'll just tell you what I won't talk about.
Okay, so again, everyone, I've addressed Cato in like almost every episode, to be honest with you. If you didn't know that, Cato, I literally bring you up in like every interview. I treat this man as like my mentor. Also, he's just one of the biggest fuckboys I know, but I do learn from him. Everything I've learned in music business, I've probably learned from Cato. Quick rundown on this man, how I know him too. I knew Cato for a long time. He was the first person to give me opportunities for pay-to-play shows. That's just how it is. Like that, he was the first person to really like give me that opportunity to get on stage when I was Kev Lowe for about 6 years. I mean, my biggest show I think I did with you, I'm trying to think. I think you did Alex Wiley, right? Yeah. So like that was probably like my biggest show I did with you, which was like
the Nether Bar.
Yeah, that when the Nether Bar was open, Mill City Nights in Minneapolis. And I mentioned Alex Wiley, in my last episode. Was that because that was probably like the best show I've done? Like it was just very well organized, good crowd, good people. It was a long time ago though.
I wonder where like that fucking kid even is now.
I don't know, man. He went through a change. He went through a whole change. Like he lost a bunch of weight and like got off drugs and I don't know, man. After that show, he was hitting on the girls that I was hitting on, which is kind of fucked up. So anyway, that's a whole different thing. But
so is life, man. So is life.
Cato, you started out as an artist, correct?
Yeah, I did. Many moons ago.
Speak on that a little bit.
Well, let's see. I started out as an artist during a period where the internet was a thing, but it wasn't a thing like it is now. Mm-hmm. So like CD Baby was the first digital distributor. And they actually, back in the day when I first got on them, they still took physical CDs, which they may still do that now, but it was only iTunes and Napster, mm-hmm. Kazaa. Kazaa might even still been a thing back then when they got forced to go legit. You don't remember Kazaa, the illegal downloading software?
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's what you used to do. They used to torrent songs off of Kazaa and then burn them onto your CDs and then take them in your car. That's how you used
it. Interesting.
But yeah, that's when I first started coming up. That was my first record I dropped was 2004, so 16 years ago.
Just give everyone some context. I graduated high school in 2014. So
you're saying that I'm old.
I've always mentioned that you're old. This is a thing.
I know.
Cato doesn't like he's getting old people.
Hey, we're all getting old. I just turned 36, and you know what? I've come to terms with the number, but I think I don't look at my life anymore and say, man, age is a thing. I look at the accomplishments and I say that's more valuable to me about where I am in my life versus, hey man, I just turned 30 or shit, right. I'm closer to 40 now than I am 30. Like fuck it, I don't care. Like everybody, the thing is, everybody I came up with is getting older too. So it's not like they can fucking judge me. Well, like I came up with Jonas. Like, I don't know how old Jonas is, but I've known him for 6-7 years, you know?
Yeah.
Webby, Sammy Adams, like all these kids younger than me, all these people were the same artists that I was on the same blogs with. I just veered off and went a different direction.
Right. And that makes sense. And that's kind of what I want to speak on is that, like, I mean, so, and you didn't give yourself enough credit. Like when I knew Kato, like the man was doing tours, he was organizing his own tours with people. Like you were very big into that. I think I saw you when you were doing tours with, what's his fucking name, dude?
On Q.
On Q and like Cam Meekins. And there's like that crew, you know what I mean? There's like a whole crew of those people. Oh my God. But I mean, yeah, dude, like that's kind of how I knew Kato. And Kato is like different than most artists. He would organize his own shows, had a phenomenal live appearance. Like he's not giving himself enough credit, but he did come up in a time that was harder than most. So I think that's kind of what like pushed you. Is that fair? Like to do something extra? Cause like you and your DJ were fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. See fans, Alex. I mean, it was one of those things where like in the mid part of the first decade of this century, we'll say it like that. Most white artists, you know, their struggle wasn't finding an audience. Their struggle was getting respected in a predominantly black culture.
Right.
That's really what it was. So like to me at that time, like if you didn't try your hardest to be, you know, do bars or write hard lyrics, like you just weren't going to be accepted. And it really wasn't a fair assessment for me because that totally was never who I was as an artist, but I'd made music like that to be more accepted. And then as I just started to learn more about the business, I drastically changed my approach, my writing style, the beat selection, the DJ, the stage performance, because it was like, at that point, I'm like, all right, I'm starting to get some blog exposure. I don't really like view these people as like peers or idols, but like, these are the people that I'm kind of around online. How the fuck am I going to stand out? Like, I don't want to be this guy that has to sell tickets to people at my work. Like, how do I stand out?
Right.
So to me, it was very simple. It was have the most badass stage show you could possibly come up with. That's really all it was.
It was super high energy. I mean, I remember, I think the last time I saw you perform was when you opened for Juicy J. Was that fair? At the Skyway Theater? Was that you? Pretty sure that was you.
No, I have Skyway Theater, I opened for Somo.
That's right. So fucking Somo, dude. Like
2017. That was the last time I performed, was 2017.
That's actually not that long ago, to be honest. I thought it was way later than that.
It was the same night as a Nappy Roots concert at Poor House, and it was just one of those, it was kind of like one of those defining moments in my life where like I knew I had made the right decision, because there really is, it's a real thing. Like people lose passion and get depressed about any part of their life because it's not going the way that they want it to. Mm-hmm. But like being on stage was always one of the most calming things for me, and one of my most like accomplished things I've ever done in my life, to be able to have done that across the country multiple times,
right,
to be able to do that consistently and keep the same high energy and always get off stage and people, and this is again, no disrespect to anybody I've ever opened for, but like to get the kind of praise where people say like, damn, you should be a headliner, or damn, that was better than the headliner set. And again, no disrespect to any of my friends that I am now associated with, but it was always nice to have that kind of like you know, accomplishment and the word I'm looking for, compliment.
Yeah.
And when I did that Somo show, I was probably like a minute into my set and I was like doing the song and looking out in the crowd, and like it was just like an epiphany. Like I knew this was it. Like I just could feel it. Like it's not there anymore. The drive, the fire to be on this fucking stage is not there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, and that's a kind of tough realization at the same time, because I mean, for me, I mean, I'm young, but like, I never had that epiphany. I just figured this is what I'm better at. I figured like I'm just better at running shows. After I did a couple with you, I was like, I mean, I'm not the greatest at making music. You just got to be honest with yourself at some point. So I mean, like, I was like, okay, I enjoy making music, but I think I'll be better at this. And that's what I think a lot of artists struggle with, because that's obviously, we talk to a lot of artists, and like these locals honestly ask me how I got into this. I just tried it. I got the opportunity and I just tried it. Cause I mean, when I joined your company, like I remember you telling me on the phone, you're just going to be an intern. Like you're only, you may be temporary. You may not be around for a while. And I was like, well, fuck, it's been a year. So it kind of just turned around.
Well, that's because when the intern thing first came about, it was, I was in a completely different place in my life and the company was under different direction by other people that had other says. And we had different styles of interns then. And Eric was one of them, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Eric was one, right? Yeah. Eric
yeah. Boat is. Yeah. Yep.
So we had like a shorter window of time and different requirements. And there was more hands-on with people being there all the time. So like when you came on, that was kind of my expectation. Like we're just going to churn and burn. Like he'll come in, he'll help for a couple of months. He'll get his feet wet and he'll go on and do whatever he's going to do. But then obviously things changed with the business for me and you're still here. So
right.
Kudos to you at the same time.
It kind of worked out. And I appreciate that for one, the honesty, because when I joined this company and I addressed this in the podcast before, I quit the Miles Graves company, which is a company that I started. It was an artist empowerment firm that I believe that I had a lot of like, we had traction at the time. I literally from ground one, logo, core values, everything. And I was like, this is a bigger opportunity. And I saw that and I was like, let's just try it. And if I get turned and burned, I was prepared for that because I didn't know shit. I didn't know anything about music business. I didn't know anything. But I think the first show I ran with Buddy was Struggle Jennings. And then the night after that, or like very close to, it was Caskey. And I had a realization after that Caskey show that if I'm able to do this so early on, I was within the same month of joining, I think that this is something I can do for my career. And that's kind of what I realized. And that was, and again, I appreciate the opportunity, I always do. But it's just shit just falls in your lap sometimes or just works out that way. And that's what I tell a lot of people because I have people listening to this podcast who are just local artists, like, dude, just try opportunities. You never know where it's going to go. I mean, you make
100%. Absolutely. And I think too, just to go back and talk what you were saying, something about that core group, that group of guys like Cam Meekins and On Cue and stuff.
Yeah.
Like I want to talk about a little bit about that too, because it was one thing that I've talked about in my own podcast where I'm trying to like embark knowledge and power onto these artists to make better decisions for their careers or lack thereof, whatever you want to call it. But I mean, when was the last time you heard about On Cue or Cam Meekins?
Yeah, unfortunately.
I don't say that in a negative context. Basically what it is like, there was like, you could name like 10 artists that came up in this blog space that probably at one point or another were all pretty even keel.
Yeah.
And like you can see which ones made a change that they knew was going to take them to the next level. And then you can also see the ones that wanted to stay how they were and never made a change. And they're where they are today. Now, don't get me wrong. Like Cam is a friend. His brother Nick is a friend. QE is a friend. Me and QE parted on bad terms over some financial stuff, but I still consider him to be a friend. I still think he's probably one of the most talented musicians I've ever heard. But the kid's never gotten his break. He wants to make music how he wants to make music and pretty much like, yeah, could I tweak this here or tweak this there? And maybe this would be more of a mainstream record or whatever the case may be. Some people decide to never do that. And I personally, On Cue is also like a very well-known graphic designer. Mm-hmm. So like if On Cue basically had to live his life based upon his music,
right,
he probably would have made that change a long time ago, but he gets to make the music he wants to make because he has a side hustle that's able to support him.
Right.
Same thing with Cam Meekins. Cam Meekins lives in LA now. He's from Boston. And I hope Cam never watches this because I want him to think I'm talking shit, but I'm pretty sure Cam's got family money. I'm pretty sure Cam owns like a fucking coffee shop or some legitimate business that allows him the freedom be able to be laissez-faire with his releases and doesn't have to be consistently, hey, I'm trying to build my fan base every single fucking day. Like Cam is just Cam, you know?
Yeah.
And some people are like completely satisfied with that life. And I'm not one to judge. But me, I was like, okay, I'm not even the size of On Cue.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to get On Cue's level. I don't know how to get to that next level. But you know what I'm really fucking good at? I'm really good at business. I'm really good at organization. I'm really good at relationships and making sure I always do what I say I'm going to do. And then it was like, all right, maybe there's something more to this than me trying to jump on stage all over the country as I'm getting older, as I'm having kids. Like it was just like, you know, there's got to be something else here, which I found that niche and now here we are.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that that is the biggest thing to take away from that is that you found your niche. And that's one thing that I never like, I mean, I didn't realize until I literally like was like, I got praised. Like, I think the only time I felt validated the entire time that I've been with CLM, and it's nothing on you because I'm just a type of person that needs that reassurance, as you know. And like, that's just how I keep moving just so I know I'm on the right path. And when I was sitting with Mod's tour manager, he was like, I could actually see you doing this full time and doing his job full time because I made his life that much easier. And when I got that praise, and especially from when Mod was like, dude, you've made my life super easy. There were no issues on my first 3-day run. Like, that to me is like, okay, I'm doing this right. Obviously, I know I'm good at business. I'm not like in depth as you are. Like, I can't do the negotiations yet, but I know that I can keep the relationships happy with CLM Presents, which is hard to do as a promoter, I have realized in this industry, because being a promoter, as you know, is a double-edged fucking sword. I've heard so many horror stories from these artists about these promoters they work with like the night before. And I'm like, yeah, holy shit. Like, I didn't think it was that. I mean, to me, if you have a brain, you can do operations for a show. I didn't think it was that crazy.
It's fucking, it sucks. Anybody who chooses to be a promoter is a crazy person.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because it's, I mean, you're fighting an unwinnable battle the whole time. Like, you're either really good and you have cash to do it and you have the relationships, but then you're fighting the battles of you're going to war against Live Nation AG. You'll fucking lose every time. Yep. Or you're dealing with the fact that you have other people who consider themselves to be promoters who fuck everyone at every single opportunity they get, sell fucking 10 slots per show for 10 minutes each. Like, it's, yeah, you're like in a position to where like you can't blame artists and managers for taking the stances they take when they deal with any promoter.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you're going to pay me everything now or this is a no-go. And it's like, That's one of the hardest things as being a legit promoter and a respected promoter is to be able to earn that trust, to be able to be like, I'm here. Yep. And you know, when it comes to like you and anybody else, like that's really ever all it was. It's like, you know, you're organized, you know how to do paperwork. Sure, it may not be exactly how I specifically want it, but right, at the end of the day, it's about giving you the empowerment and the knowledge to be able to like keep that same ideology and not go off any side of the path that anyone, the idea that, hey, maybe is it Cato? Is he the only one in this organization that's on his shit and everyone else is just kind of like, right, no, it's got to be, we may not all have the same skills or you may not have learned everything that you want to know, but like if we're all here at all the time, then everything else is learnable. Like that's at least how I approach this.
That's a phenomenal way to approach it. And like, I think, yeah, that everyone staying consistent is the biggest thing, especially when we're working with people who, like we talked about, who may have, even the night before, a promoter may have tarnished their relationship. And then they're like, well, is that going to happen again tonight? And they've already booked this date and they're already going into it pretty nervous. So, I mean, I don't know. I've just seen a lot of promoters
I'll give you a perfect example. Sorry to cut you off. Like, whenever we did the run with Struggle this February, and I picked up a market that we've never been in, Kansas City, Missouri. And I get there, Popcorn jumps off the bus, says, what's up? Struggle, Trap, the DJ, Scatterbrains.
Yeah, Scatterbrains.
You know, they all jump off the bus, and like I'm in the green room talking to Popcorn, and he was saying something about Struggle was asking him like, well, what's the run of show for the next 4 days or some shit like that. And the first thing out of Popcorn's mouth is like, oh, you don't have to worry about that. Struggle was like, what do you mean? He's like, it's Cato. Like that doesn't mean that's a lack.
No.
I've obviously communicated it thorough enough that he's comfortable telling his artist like, hey,
don't worry about it. Yep.
You don't have to be as on edge tonight or the next 5 nights because we're actually working with someone who's professional.
Mm-hmm.
Company that values this shit.
And that's what Futuristic told me when I was working with him in Iowa, was that like, he knew that he's known you for a while, and I went on his bus and he was like, oh, you work for Cato. Oh, that's the only reason why I had that opportunity, because he was just so calm, so relaxed. He had nothing to worry about. He knew the show was going to be handled. You know what I mean? So like it wasn't an issue. And that's one thing, man, that
Zach, like I'd go back to 2014 with him. I booked him in Louisville, Indy. I booked him at a church in Indianapolis, for fuck's sake, with only one speaker that worked and a sound guy who I'm pretty sure was drunk.
Nice.
I booked him in Chicago. Like, I booked Zach all over the place. And then whenever me and Nate did the Mike Studd tour, him, Futuristic, Devon, and Moosh and Twist were on that tour. So I actually got to spend time with Zach and everyone without having to be a promoter.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, his camp is dope. And, you know, it's unfortunate he's not with Ryan anymore.
Yeah, things have changed, obviously. And he was, I mean, I'm not going to speak too much on that for, you know, his privacy's sake. But, I mean, he's made the adjustments he's needed to make. He's still, Code Break's still phenomenal. I mean, their work ethic is still phenomenal. So, no matter the crowd size, because if they're going up or down or not, those people were very chill, very good people. And I think that it was just cool to get the opportunities. I asked him, I was like, what makes a good promoter in your opinion? And like, I think I put it on my last podcast with Jonas, but he basically just said the same thing Jonas said. Like, as long as everything is, the hospitality is good, the tech's good, and everything's like just running smoothly, that's all they ask for. And to me, that's like not that difficult. So I'm wondering where these promoters fuck up. That's where I don't understand.
I think I would agree that those are important, but I would say that those are secondary in my opinion. I think the number one key to being a good promoter is just communication. That's literally it. That's like, if I had to pick one golden rule, what's the key to life? Communicating.
Yeah.
And if you can apply that to everything, then you're going to be leaps and bounds ahead of everyone. How in 20 fucking 20, this is attached to everybody's hand all times of the day, like basically sleeps on your fucking head at night.
Phones,
can you not communicate with someone, especially when it has to do with money or a business deal? That escapes me, and it speaks volumes and levels to the shit ass person you are as a fucking human.
Right.
So like, again, popcorn, this is just stuff that gets reiterated all the time, is like, man, yeah, everything from the communication on is also flawless, but the simple fact that I don't have to fucking chase you down for ticket counts or when I can get this money, like, that's, to these guys, that's their biggest thing. They have to step off this fucking bus and they have to figure out, oh shit, I don't know what, because just like put it in, like, put yourself in their shoes for a second, right?
Yeah.
You're driving into fucking town. You're the tour manager. You've been calling, texting, emailing a promoter who you can't get a hold of. You don't know where, you've never been to this venue before. You don't know the fucking parking situation. You don't know how many security is going to be there for meet and greet or by the stage. You don't know where the green room is. You don't know where the load-in section is because you can't get a fucking answer. You have no idea how many locals there are. You have no idea how many tickets have been sold. So when you start getting down the line of all these things, now the next thing creeps in your head is, am I going to get paid?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what the fuck? Like, Popcorn emails me, dude, I'm on it. I will email you back within 5 fucking minutes. Even
Popcorn
if,
struggles
even
if what I'm about, manager.
Yeah. So even like if you don't like the information I'm going to give you, at least I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Like, that's my tangent.
No, that was solid. No, that was fucking solid, because those are things that people don't think about. Like, again, like it's I don't know how to say this. It's just, again, because I mainly work with the locals and they all ask me the same kind of question. And I'm just like, dude, they asked me what puts me in good standing with CLM. And I said, just make sure you communicate and you do everything that we need you to do, and we'll do everything we need to do. And that's it. That's purely it. But again, that's why I say, and I've told Jonas this, you just need a fucking brain to work in this industry. Because to me, it's not that difficult. It's like any other business venture. If artists don't look at themselves as businesses, and if they don't take that work ethic into their craft, then they're never, ever going to even have a shot, period. Because a lot of people just want that glorified, you know, lifestyle pretty much. And that communication is huge. As we can see, you know, I'm not going to name artists, but, you know, the people that sometimes we work with that don't show up or don't come with full amounts or just basic things that shouldn't surprise you, but surprise me because of just the lack of work ethic and communication they have. And like that's one thing I agree. The golden rule is fucking communication.
At the same time, how many times have we worked out situations with people just because they've communicated?
Like, yeah.
And just to publicly on this forum address the pay to play, because you said that earlier.
Yep.
I tried to create a situation that kind of encompassed everything that an artist was used to and make it one cohesive thing that everybody could benefit from.
Yeah.
Rather than putting artists in shitty situations financially, like, because that's the truth of the matter is, if we owned a venue, I would book one local. That's it.
Yep.
I would never book another fucking local act again. And that has everything to do with the few ruin it for the many. You know, that's not me saying that 10 out of 10 artists suck ass because they're shitty at communication or they're liars, whatever. It's just one out of 10 fucks it up for the other nine, because right. It's the same thing in our situation, right? With managers, one shitty promoter ruins it for the rest. It's just this downhill fucking cycle that, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want to put my money on the line for a bunch of fucking liars, for a bunch of fucking people who are going to screw me over. Like, right. I don't want to put four acts on a show. And sometimes we're giving them the opportunity because they've come through for us in the past. But by the time we book four acts and then I find out from the tour that they've got five acts on the tour, yep. Now I'm like, all right, now this is going to give me a bad rep because now we have nine acts on the show. But no one looks at the inner side and says, maybe this isn't CLM's fault, because it's fucking not.
Yep.
But that's just my spiel on that. Like, I have a lot of respect for good local artists, but like.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I mentioned pay to play is because in my last episode, I mentioned pay to play versus DIY, do it yourself. And I say that I literally told people the minute that you exchange any kind of money for anything for a slot, that is pay to play, period. I mean, that's just what it is. And that has a really bad rep and rumor, because I mean, a lot of people come to me, like my friends, my personal friends who work in this industry come to me and say, I've had literally people say, why are you working for a company that's just pay to play? And I'm like, it's true in a sense, but at the same time, like you said, we look out for these artists. We actually give them the opportunity to hustle and profit. Like, so I don't understand what the problem is with that mindset. I just don't get it, because I had to address that, because it's just, I'm trying to change that. I'm trying to change that stigma with that, pay to play. Dude, try running a whole show yourself and see how much liability there is, how much you're responsible for, whose shoulders does it fall on? Like, I had a buddy of mine who's, I'm just going to be honest, if he listens, I'm sorry, bro, super ignorant. He was trying to throw a festival right now. And now he was like, well, the liability just comes from the sponsors paying the artist. I was like, no, bro, the sponsor's giving you the money for you to allocate to the artist. That means that money and anything liable with that artist falls on you. It doesn't fall on the fucking sponsor. They're going to look for you for that check. Like, that's what I don't understand. So that's why you have to cover your ass, and not just that, but with these locals, they should do the same. I mean, what's the first thing we send with these local artist contract? What is the first fucking line? If you can't take this opportunity, don't.
Don't.
That's it. I don't think. Just think with your brain. If you can't afford it, or if you can't risk it, then don't do it. There's so many other things you could be doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you are right. If there's an exchange of currency for said slot, right, you can classify that as a pay to play. That's the pyramid. But there's breakdowns of how that fucking works. If I come to you and I say, hey, Kevlo, I've got this opportunity for you to fucking open for Drake. I want you to give me tickets are $50 and I've got 100 of them. I want you to give me $5,000 right now and I'll give you 120 tickets, the extra 20 you get to keep the money off of. That is 100% the definition of a pay to play. Yep. I've taken money from you and I haven't delivered shit to you yet. That is horse shit.
Yeah.
Which is why I was saying, when I was trying to create an idea, a bubble of how to do this correctly without feeling like I was taking advantage of people, but also feeling like I wasn't being taken advantage of myself. That's the key. So that's why we outline these terms. We specifically say to you, if you can't fucking do this, please don't do this, because I don't want to be in this situation later with you. Mm-hmm. So we create an algorithm based upon the cost of the show and what we feel like the show is going to sell. Like, it's all stuff that we do, like data, and we come back and we'll be like 20 tickets or 25. You pay a small deposit, $100, which means I'm just releasing these tickets to you, because we would be bad business people if I gave you $500 worth of something and you gave me nothing in return. Right. I'm a bad business person if I do that.
Right.
So like, if you can't comprehend that that's an exchange of a business, then you yourself as the artist, you're a fucking idiot. So you give us $100, I'll hold your money. I've got escrow accounts. I'll hold your money in an escrow account. If you ever want to see that I've got it, I'll fucking show it to you. I give you $500 worth of value. Let's just remove the word tickets. I give you $500 right. worth of value. It is now on you to go sell those and show up with the fucking money.
Right.
You turn the money in to you or buddy. You get on stage, you do your fucking thing. But on top of that, you get to make money off of every single one of those tickets. And it's not this, oh, you get $2 per ticket for 20 tickets and I made $40. Like, no, bro, like Fat yep. Shayna, OG Ugly here in Louisville made like $400, $500 off the Struggle Jennings show. Kid yep. Automatic routinely makes $250, $300, $400 fucking dollars every time he does a show.
Right.
So anybody out there who wants to talk shit about CLM and saying we're doing pay to plays can lick these fucking nuts. Because every artist we work with makes fucking money. And if yeah. they don't, it's their own fault.
Yep.
Plain and simple.
And that's not too hard to understand. I've had many arguments with many of my close friends about it, and it bothers me. It's just something I had to address because I wouldn't have joined the company if we were slimy in any way, shape, or form. I was a goddamn artist for 6 years doing the same thing with you. I literally like, and I'm not going to lie, there wasn't one time I worked with you that I had to pay out of pocket. Not one time. I mean, I always broke even or I always made money. And that's why I referenced that Wiley show, because that show sold out pretty sure. And I made hella fucking bank on my merchandise, on the tickets. Like, and that's the combination of things. Like, as an artist, if you are not making money from multiple different buckets, then why are you doing this? Because that's how real headlining artists make money. It's not one fat check. It's a check from sponsors. It's a check from touring. It's a check from merchandise. It's a, you know what I mean? Like, so it's, if you're not doing that already on a small scale, you're not going to be able to handle that lifestyle on a bigger scale. That's why every artist is a fucking business.
Exactly. 100%. And just to clarify that real quick too, the max we've ever put on a show that we've ever done is 5. And to me, that was too much. There was extenuating circumstances as to why we did that. It had something to do with the headlining artist requesting that this artist was on after this. So right. Everybody out there too, like, please understand, we're limiting ourselves because we could be those shitty promoters. We could be those guys that go and book 10 fucking people and basically pay for the whole show plus a lot of it by the support acts. I will not do that. Yeah. I will break even, or I will fucking lose money before we ever downgrade the quality experience of the patrons.
Yep.
CLM Presents, I could name off 50 fucking people that we have repeat customers from. Kids that have spent $2,000 on concert tickets for CLM concerts. And that to me just shows that not only are we doing our job by bringing quality fucking talent that people like, but we're also giving them an experience that doesn't have them walking away saying, fuck, I'll never go to one of their shows again.
Right.
So like, it's trying to keep the fans happy, make sure that we're mitigating and limiting our risk, and at the same time, keeping the managers and the artists and the fucking agents happy. It's anybody who can do it consistently is probably like me. But if you can't, you're probably a shitty promoter. I'm just saying.
what's next, man? What's up with Kato right now? Because I know people be asking about you, bro, in the city. They're like, yo, I see that you're at these shows and Kato's not. What's Kato been doing? And I can't tell him anything.
Well, CLM in a good spot going into COVID. We only had to move one show, and that was the Riff Raff show in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Yep.
And that happened just 9 days ago, something like that. And it was actually a really good fucking show. I broke even on show, which only reason why we broke even is because a cocksucker didn't show up.
Yep.
But no, man, it's just November of last year, you know, after story, I've told many people this story. I mean, not many, but it's kind of a private thing. I have a love of people that work hard and have helped me get to where I'm at. I don't say like helped me in like a small way. I mean, like people who believe in the core values that I believe in and fucking work their asses off. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to pay it forward, to pay it back to them. Like you at some point bringing you on full time to sure. let you really like spread your fucking caw-caw wings and mm-hmm. figure out the situation. Cause like, I'm not always going to be around to run CLM. Like I love going to Minneapolis. I love seeing all my friends. I love being the face of something that's there and present, but like, it's fucking exhausting, man. I don't want to do yeah. that shit all the time. But anyways, November of last year, I was like having like a breakdown in my hotel room in St. Louis. Cause I was like, man, I don't know where to go. Like, I'm just going to continue to recycle this shit and hope that I get these shows and keep competing. And like, Kevlo's got a job, you know, buddy's got travel restrictions.
Yep.
And all I'm doing is going from one show to four shows to five shows to seven shows. And it's like, I can't, physically fucking do all of this. I can't do it. So I, you know, on my drive home, started like plotting out like, okay, well, how do I do this? You know, everything stems from Schaefer management. Everything stems from the marketing anyways. Everything stems from the data and the organization that that one company, me, kind of bestows. And that's how the bar event company works. That's how the concert business works. The bar event company is pretty much, it's done. I don't give a fuck about that. Cut that shit down. It was already too much of a hassle anyways. Too many bars, not consistently enough helping. This just made that a fucking no-go.
Yep.
So I was like, all right, well, what I need to focus on is I need to really hone in and focus on the marketing side of things. And I need to create more outbound, have an outbound ability with all of these relationships that I've made and real people in from marketing. So, you know, come maybe end of December, early January, you know, like I took my part-time gig, contract gig, client gig with Webby to a full-time, you know, monthly thing.
Yep.
I had the opportunity to work with Riff Raff, and that in itself has been a fucking massive blessing because I have the opportunity to work with someone who, I don't say this a lot and I don't say this to brag, but someone who has got a side to them that I don't 100% have yet. And they are fucking so brilliant and smart mm-hmm. that like, I feel like it's an honor to work with them because we're like a yin and a yang. Like I have these skills that he doesn't necessarily possess. He has these skills that he's trying to teach me. And like, we just work really, really fucking well. And I've never had a business person in my life that has not only taught me so much in such a short window of time, but also backed up everything that he's fucking said. Cause I've been in a lot of situations where people like basically are their think tanks. They think a lot and they have these great fucking ideas, but when it comes to execution, they don't do dick and the work falls on me. And it's like, I'm already bogged down with all this other shit, but this dude, he pulls and weight and then some. So that's pretty much it, man. Like I was brought on to do a certain thing and it's morphed and grown into this much larger thing than I ever could have fucking fathomed. And it's partially, I mean, it's actually the biggest reason why fast tracking, you know, you buddy, hopefully into the company is going to happen way sooner than expected because I'm able to do it now.
Yeah. And that's so phenomenal.
That's what I'm up to.
Yeah, no, that's why. I mean, I'm glad you addressed it because people will be asking, you know, me in particular. And again, like it's phenomenal first off, because it's basically you just getting the opportunities that you have worked hard for through CLM, because CLM does open doors. I mean, Jonas was talking to me about it and he's like, dude, just be honest with yourself and say like CLM is going to be not your end goal. You know what I mean? Like that's not it. That's not the end goal. And like I've talked to tour managers that are like, you could do my job. No problem. And I'm like, I believe that to a certain extent. I just don't want to hop into it as being so young. I want to put in my reps with this company. I want to like, cause I feel like at this point I've done only like 30 some shows. And that's like, I know a lot, but until I can literally never text you at a show, which never happens, until I can literally just not pick up the phone and worry about texting you about something, I think that's when I'm ready to move on. But that's not going to happen for years. I've only been with you for a year now. And I consider what I do with you full time, because it's maybe, I've told people this, it's no secret. Maybe it's not the money that's making that full time. It's literally just the amount of hours I put in, because I work now. I tell people I work two full time jobs. I work 10 hours at Apple and I'll work 10 hours at CLM in our peak, obviously not COVID, but like in our peak, because that's what I would do. Like I'd be like, sorry, Kato, I can't get on until 9 p.m. and that's when I'll be responding to emails. So it's like, but dude, when CLM's in their prime, it's email after email after email after conversation after fucking, you got to look at something every day. So yeah, that's definitely what makes it full time.
The 100%. That's the great thing. And like I said, is we only had one show we had to reschedule. And basically because I've had these other opportunities, like I'm not sitting here burning through cash of CLM. Like that's still going to be there when it's ready, when we're ready to get back to work. But it is that like 100%, like this is not your end goal. It was never my end goal. But at the same time, like I don't even think CLM has hit its peak. But there's so many opportunities out there for this company to grow leaps and fucking bounds. There's so many opportunities to really bring in and hone everything. Everything right now that's kind of like splattered over here and over here, it's kind of its own thing, but it all in some way, shape, or form revolves around CLM. And once all the finance answers are right, everything's going to come in and there's going to be services that are available from CLM that will make CLM bigger. And then CLM will no longer be the focus. It'll be everything in the umbrella that'll be the focus. So like that in itself is sort of an end goal, because once the company gets to a size like that, like there's going to be staffing, there's going to be so much responsibility that, you know, I hope you know you're ready for.
No, oh, yeah, 100%. I'm definitely ready for it, but we'll see when that day comes. So you said riffraff. We got hopes for CLM to come back. Anything else going on with Cato that the people should know about?
Just trying to, the great thing about this is if you're an artist that makes money right now, you understand that this is a downer of a time because you can't go out there and meet your fans and do touring. But if you're an artist that makes money, you're creative and you have a smart amount of people around you, your money right now should be going through the fucking roof.
Yeah,
it really should, because there's so many opportunities out there to make money and to present value to your fans outside of doing shows. You know, like let's take Webby, for example. Like we're focusing a lot of time right now on social media growth and fan engagement.
Yep.
And it's going swimmingly well from a Facebook perspective. And now, you know, he's connecting the dots on some more Spotify marketing, some more YouTube marketing, things that aren't, they're in my abilities, but they're not in like my, I would not say, hey, can you do this as well as other people? Like, no, I fucking can't. Like, it's just not my focus. Plus I don't have time for that shit,
right,
to be quite honest. So like someone like Webb, like he's dying. He's like, I need to be on the road. And I'm like, I get it. But you have so much great content. You have, so I mean, anyways, that's just the point. If anyone's out there right now making excuses about how this time is fucking their music career up, then they're lazy and they have no drive, because there's no reason why you can't be like Russ and make a song a day for fucking 2 years and
for
then just
real.
sit on that vault of hits and then just bang them out.
Yeah, no. And if you're not making a vault of hits, like you said, you could be easily making videos right now for yourself. You could be finding different ways to engage with the fans. You could be working on different types of merchandise. I mean, there's so many things that artists could be doing right now that they're not. Even with Bodiz, like he's like, well, what do I do? I'm like, dude, it's easy for when you're an up and coming artist, especially locals, because all you should be doing is making a plethora of music, releasing it as much as you can, like scheduling that out and then making videos and other visualizers to like get people engaged. Once people are engaged and they've, you know, saw your content enough, and then they'll be excited when we're able to do shows again, which I don't, you're not able to answer this question, but like, again, it's a topic that a lot of people be like asking in general from promoters, when can shows start again? And I just love that question, because you're like, dude, I don't know. I don't fucking know. When can I not wear a mask to the fucking gym? I don't know. Maybe never.
I mean, I'm not completely the wrong person to talk about COVID with. You know that. I mean, I can't even talk to it. Megan asked me a question and then I've talked for 12 minutes and she's like, can you just shut the fuck up?
Yeah.
It's funny on it. I'll keep this short and sweet, so I don't bore anybody or make them think I'm a crazy person, but it's funny. It's not funny, but it's ironic that there's not third world countries, but there's countries out there that were hit first, right?
Yep.
That don't have the infrastructure for health support. Healthcare and health support as we do, right? So like when we were hearing all these horror stories about, like, I think it was Italy or whatever, like X percent of the population was in ICU and all this shit. Well, like, well, no shit. Like you don't have the same type of medical attention and health care that we have here. Sure, ours costs an arm and a leg, but we have like the best fucking doctors in the world here, right, in Canada. Like, so it's different. Like the expectation of that to me is the same, but then here we are, you know, like a month later and the US is starting to get hit. And to me, it's like, it's either a win-win situation for people who don't want to wear masks, right?
Yeah.
I'm new to this belief. It's a win-win. If the CDC really says, hey, we can clear this out in 4 to 8 weeks if everybody just put a fucking mask on, why would the people who don't want to wear masks just do that? Why would they not?
Right.
It's a win for you, right? Because either at the end of 8 weeks, this is going to be gone, you can take the fucking mask off, or two, you're going to have been right the whole time. It's a win-win. So just put the mask on and shut the fuck up. I personally, someone with COVID could cough in my mouth for all I fucking know. I wouldn't welcome that, but like based on the statistics that are out there, and don't, and it's another thing too, if everything was true, every news outlet would say the same thing, but they don't.
Yep.
That's a huge fucking problem and a huge red flag, which is why there's so much confusion in this country, because we have so many people who think they have a fucking opinion that we can't be like Japan. Like Japan went on national shutdown emergency for 2 months and they just reopened. They had zero deaths, because places like Japan and China and shit, when the government fucking says something, if you don't listen, guess what? They fucking kill you. Like you can't do that here.
Dictatorship. Yeah.
You fucking tell Texans to fucking put on a mask. They're like, what the fuck did you say? Like, I'm
right. Right.
Come different to my culture. House. I'll fuck. It's yeah. different. So everyone here has their opinion and it's media driven. I personally don't think any of this is political. It's media fucking driven.
Yeah.
It's ratings. People want ratings and dollars. Like it's so yes. Is COVID real? Yes, it is real.
Yeah.
Should everyone be freaked out about a surge in cases? No, you shouldn't. You really shouldn't.
And why is that?
Go look at the hard data that is reported to Google. Google's data. If you just look up COVID-19 on Google, it'll show you every single real stat that you want to know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, some of them might be skewed because states now are getting called out for having reported the antibody tests with the COVID tests. So yep. there's like information that might be wrong. But the point is this. COVID window is 2 weeks, 14 to 16 days.
Mm-hmm.
So this is some basic fucking graphs for you. If yep. we're at X, right? And then we're at deaths are here.
Yep.
And then a month later after opening rephases and our cases are here so high that they're out of the fucking video frame, but our deaths are still here.
Yeah.
What's the problem? Like I don't understand what the fucking problem is.
I don't know what the problem is.
Put the mask on, but the deaths aren't, they're not going up. They're not going up.
I think
H1N1 in 2009 wiped out 50.
Yeah.
More masks. We didn't crash the global economy. We didn't, right. We didn't do none of that.
Right.
I know and you have to go to work, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm, let's not talk about that. That doesn't exist. I'm not worried about that. I'm being serious. Anyone who has a side hustle, you just understand that, you know, whatever you want to be your full-time gig, that's priority. So that's what's priority right now. And I'm going to just talk about this topic real quick though, because like it's a lot of the problem with what's going on. And I'm going to be completely honest with people. You can hate on me for whatever you want. I'm not like a conspiracy theorist or anti-mask person because I believe in it and I have I listen to the professionals because I don't know, I'm not going to lie like most people. I'm not a fucking doctor. So let's be real here. I've heard a lot of things where people are being administered as COVID patients and their tests are negative for, you know, hospitals to benefit, for hospitals to get more supplies, for them to get more funding. Some of this is true, but some of it's not.
The governor of Illinois came out and said that 2 months ago.
Yeah,
he said in a live broadcast.
And I want to be very clear with people. How does that work? Well, okay, it's very simple. If a person's going to die regardless, they're going to call it a COVID death. Why? Because they get $30,000 per patient and more supplies. On top of that, if you're pro, basically this is affecting the low income people as well, like myself, because if you get a basic test for COVID, if you don't have deep pockets, it's going to take 2 to 5 days to get that result back. In the meantime, you know, there has been people proven to be put on ventilators. And if you're put on a ventilator, we don't know how to handle this virus. So 60 to 90% of those people are dying from ventilators. So then if you do that and think, okay, well, did that person even have COVID? Why were they on a vent? They were on a vent because the minute they get put on a vent, they can classify them as COVID, even if the test is negative and they're in the same room with COVID patients. So if they're not the ones already getting COVID, they're going to get COVID. Then they can be ruled as a COVID death. Then they can get more money and then they can call it done. And that's the fucked part of it. That is one side of this whole pandemic. The other side of the problem is that the masks, and people are saying, well, if I put on a mask, I'm going to be more immune. Like, what is it called? Immunocompromised. And I was like, well, some of that is true, right? If you put on a cloth mask and it's holding all your moisture in, then you may become immunocompromised because of basically just because of you're exhaling all the bullshit that you're supposed to be exhaling, right? It's supposed to get out of your body and it's holding in that moisture. So again, and that's for mainly the elderly or people who already have problems, but you wear a mask like an N95 when you're traveling, when you're doing these things, not just sitting in your car, is because you are helping the world not spread your germs. That is purely it. But people who are like dumb about it either don't wear one because they don't believe it because they hear these facts, or two, because they're wearing it 24/7 and they get sick because they are wearing it 24/7, like in their home. It's like, don't be dumb. Like, so I don't know, man. I have a whole gripe on it because, again, a lot of my friends are conspiracy theorists with this bullshit.
At the same time, like I said, I do think that this, someone asked me yesterday if I thought that this is a man-made virus, and I don't have any statistics out there or any facts that support what I'm about to say, but I personally think, because there's a quote right now, and if you really think about it, it's fucking true. Imagine a virus so strong that you have to have a test that tells you if you either A, have it, or B, had it. Right. So that to me seems like this is something in your body that you is kind of already there. It's kind of like HPV, right? Every yep. person is born with a strand of HPV in their system, but it takes something to interact with it to make it active.
Yep.
So sure. If this is, I just feel like this something out there that was either created or whatever the case may be that is interacting with what people already have in their bodies and is either making it worse for them or it's not having any effects on them. Yep. But I think all the telltale signs is now people are saying, well, if you're not a doctor, you shouldn't have a fucking opinion. Well, let's just do this quick math. Dr. Fauci, the head of the Center of Infectious Diseases in this fucking country, keeps saying the different things. Yeah. So if he would just come out and say, hey, folks, I don't have the fucking answers, I think everyone would be like, all right, bet. I can live with that. But well, if he one day he says, wearing a mask isn't going to do anything. And then 1 week later he goes, you should definitely wear a mask. Wait a second. You want to hold up. This is the top. This is our top dude. This is our 79-year-old, went to John Hopkins University, top dude in the Center for Infectious Disease. Can you make up your fucking mind?
Yeah. Well, and that's that.
And then the media runs with that shit. And then it's like, yeah, here we go. Everybody's got an opinion.
And that's contradiction. That's why, like, when people are like, I think the information should be filtered through the White House. I'm like, okay, dude, now we're getting into a whole different conversation. And that to me is just, I don't know. There's a lot to do with COVID. There's a lot going on. I'm just saying everyone's sensitive this year.
What did I tell you in person? I told you that the things, if anything, I told you two things back to back. I said, if the solution to a virus is common sense, how bad can the fucking virus be? Because look, what did I say? Vinyl makers and poster makers, these guys, their businesses have grown 100% because every business in the world is wash your hands, cough into your arm, hold up. These are common sense.
Right.
So we have that many dumb fucking people in the world. I mean, yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Like that's it.
But you know what? If businesses finally are going to take that extra step to like put up a piece of plastic between the register, bet. Props. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Or
6 feet so your cart doesn't ram me in the ass while we're walking to the store. Bet. You want me to walk down this way while they walk down that way? Respect. Like these are things I can get on board with and I hope they fucking stay moving forward. Honestly, man, wearing a mask, people are fucking nasty.
Yeah,
fucking who gives a shit? Nasty.
Yeah, who gives a shit if we have to wear a mask? Like, again, if this is the way of life, I'm fine with it as long as things reopen.
Dude, Michael Rapaport, he calls them yuck mouth fucks. Yuck mouth fucks. Think about what people put in their mouth and
right.
It's like it's disgusting. Wear a fucking mask. Actually, we're going to staple one to your fucking face. You can't take it off.
Right. And that's actually one thing people like, again, concert goers are asking me, like, is your company taking any kind of like stance towards COVID? And because like, again, everyone's got to take a stance towards COVID. I'll be honest, Kato, we didn't really talk about it, but like, I kind of already told people, you saw my emails, like I was very clear, like this is up to your discretion, but I'd highly advise to not be a dumbass is pretty much what I say in those emails. And like, well, to concert goers, like, what am I going to do to fucking Jim over here who's drunk off his ass? Am I going to fucking throw a mask on his face?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a situation where like every company, every person is going to have to, there's going to be like waivers of liability that are going to be flying out the wazoo for everyone. Like for Riff Raff, we had to send waivers of liability to these venues to say like, you need to put these up because we're not going to take responsibility. Like, this is my job. I'm here to do this. I'm going to be safe in my own right. But at the same time, if you as the establishment can't do your job to either do what's being advised by the CDC, taking temperatures, wearing masks, and you're going to allow your patrons in here and not follow social distancing guidelines, I'm not going to be responsible for that. You as the establishment have to do that. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if once like this shit, things start reopening to where people actually are in mass gatherings that people like aren't fucking doing lawsuits saying like, oh, I got COVID because I went to a place where you didn't do social distance. Like, nah, bro, this is on you. Like,
yeah, it's on the venue.
No, it's on the venue. It's on you as the patron.
Oh, yeah. Your choice. Yep.
If businesses, I guarantee you legally will do every step they can to make sure they're not going to get fucked by assholes out there that want to press lawsuits. But you as the individual, it is your fucking choice. Don't buy. Remember, I wouldn't give a refund to that person. Don't buy a fucking ticket to something. It's your, this is, doesn't matter. COVID, car accident, death in the family. Everything is a risk.
Yep.
Just because it's COVID doesn't mean that I as the business should now be like, whoop, well, sorry.
Dude, give me your
money back.
And I'm not going to lie. I have a very strong stance on COVID and the benefits of people like reaping and just like abusing the system right now. And I'm going to be, I'll end on this point. Cause again, I don't want any bad opinions about COVID, and we kind of trailed off from music to COVID, but I'll just say this about it. Like, it's a fucking tough and sensitive time, but look at the fucking, like, listen to the people whose jobs it is to do this every goddamn day. And don't be a conspiracy theorist. Don't be just, you know, an anti-mask person is what they're calling them now. I call them, don't be a Karen. Don't be someone who's just blatantly ignorant sitting in suburbia and doesn't know how to set up a goddamn iPhone. Don't do that.
It's just filter the information.
Yeah. Well, right.
You can't take everything. Yeah, exactly. You can't take everything as is. Like, you have to be intelligent enough to have done your own research before you just blindly form a fucking stupid opinion.
And if your facts about this whole scenario is, you know, I think, or if your words start with that, or, you know, I heard. Yep.
I don't want to hear you talk. Shut the fuck up.
No, at that point, I'm like, don't open your mouth anymore. Mm-hmm. You're done talking.
Don't spread that COVID.
All right, man. Hey, I know you got places to be. I appreciate you being on the podcast, my guy. Anything you want to say, heading out.
You know, more power to Mini Cato. I mean, Kevin over here. I hope the podcast goes well. And thanks, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no problem, dog. Have a good day.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Kev's Perspective this week. I greatly appreciate every listener I can get. Please go follow me on YouTube, K-E-V-S Perspective, or get at me on Instagram, K-E-V-L-O-E Official. If you want to go to YouTube to see the visual, if you want to get at me for Instagram to see, again, any kind of guests, any kind of topics you want revolving around the music industry, please get at me for those questions. Again, thank you for tuning in. Have a great day. It's crazy.